This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3236 for Monday the 28th of December 2020. Today's show is entitled, The State of Linux Audio Apps in 2020. It is the first show by new host Pat from the Linux Link Tech Show, and is about 52 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Patrick Davila and Claudio Miranda discuss the current state of Linux audio application in 2020.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Welcome. This is Pat Davila of the Linux Link Tech Show. I'm with my good friend, Claudia Miranda. Claudia, how you doing?
Good. How you doing, Pat?
It's been a long time since we've talked. You know, I remember where you and Chad used to do your show, and it was very enjoyable. I used to listen to it all the time, and I miss you guys.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
I know. Time flies, doesn't it?
Indeed it does, yeah. Everybody's gotten older, less hair. Kids are bigger, so, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is right. But we've got good things to talk about today. Today we're talking about the current state of Linux audio production in 2020, going into 2021. And I have to say, I am happily surprised where everything is now. It's much better than what it used to be, in my opinion. It's much more usable. A lot of the software is more mature. A lot of the new software is really exciting and really usable. And that seems to be my impression right now.
Yeah, I have to agree. It definitely has come a long way. I think the last time, I mean, I've been using it here and there within the past 10 years, but since I really was into it early on, I would say about like 2010s or around that time, today it's come a long way, quite a long way. And the development of a lot of the software has matured so much, like you said. It's very impressive, and we're starting to see a lot of people take notice of audio on Linux. I mean, it's got a way to go. It's still not perfect, but it's gotten a lot better.
Yeah. I mean, we still have the issues of having multiple sound servers and having to connect all the pieces with jack and whatnot, but and pulse and you know whatever sound services are running. But it seems to be much more usable, like. You know, when I first started getting into Linux, the first application I got into was Audacity, which is a fairly simple audio recording software. You know, you could do multi-tracks, you can import files. A lot of podcasters use it. It's free. It's fairly easy to use. When I was doing the MIT-TV cast with Dan Fry, I got into using Ardour. And for podcasting, it was really good. The sound quality was excellent. The interface was fairly comparable to other digital audio workstation software that was, you know, commercial and also free. You know, they kind of have the same look. They're mimicking, you know, basically a mixing board in a digital sense. And it's, you know, but it's been a few years since I used that. I'm going to say maybe 5 or 6 years ago was the last time I looked at it. So the reason why I decided to check everything out again is I've gotten into playing guitar a little more now than I used to. And,
cool.
And I want to start recording some ideas that I have. So I started looking out there, and I looked at some of these commercial applications like Cubase or you know, Logic or whatever, and it's really expensive. You're talking $600, $700, $800, $900 just for the software, and it seems to do the same thing that our door does. And to me, I might as well just go with that, you know.
Yeah, pretty much. It's been a while since I've looked at a lot of commercial stuff. On my end, it's been more, you know, not so much of the digital audio recording, but more of the MIDI playback and sequencing kind of thing.
Right.
Back in the day.
You're a keyboard player.
Yeah. I play keys. So for me, back in the day, I mean, I'm talking about like 20 years. I messed around with a lot of the proprietary stuff, but because that's what was available at the time, we either on a Mac or on Windows.
Right. Use whatever worked at the time.
Right. And I would use, my go-to application, was MasterTrax Pro, which was relatively cheap back in the day. It was just all it did was sequencing, and it was very good at it. And it's very, very easy to use. And I had done a lot of music. I used that for a very, very long time until the point where the company, I think they got bought out. Passport Designs, I think it was the name of the company. They got bought out by another company, and I think another company. And you can still purchase the software, in instances where you might need to use that. But at this point, it's kind of not the same as what you would get with other software that's available or even available within the last 20 years. So it's started to show its age. But I did get interested in doing, because I was working a lot on the Mac side, mainly working with, I used to use a lot of GarageBand after that, because it kind of gave me that same feel that I had in MasterTrax Pro. And from there, once I left the Apple platform, I was like, well, I want to continue working on music, and I would love to do it in Linux. And I would search. I mean, I remember by the time I was looking at that, Ubuntu Studio kind of debuted. I had tried that. Actually, I installed the PowerPC version on the iMac G5 I used to have, and it worked. It did what I needed it to do, but I would encounter a lot of issues. And I don't know if it's just the software at the time or even the hardware. The Linux kernel really wasn't focused on real-time, low latency kind of stuff. So you get a lot of, especially if you're using Jack, you get a lot of what they call the X runs, and it would just be dropouts in the data transfer, and it would just throw everything off sync, or it would crash the programs, and half the time I spent more time trying to troubleshoot stuff than I did working on music.
Yeah, kind of besides the point. You want to be able just to create, get into the workflow.
So as time passed, processors got a lot faster. I'd throw more cores into the mix, and I still, like right now, I'm on a Core i5 laptop. And it's got 8 gigs of RAM, and I was actually started to work on some stuff this past weekend, actually Thanksgiving. I was like, let me fire it up because it'd been a while. And I started, I went ahead and I loaded up Qtractor, which has been my go-to since for a while now, as a matter of fact. I had, going back to what I was saying earlier, most of what I used, I was trying to find a good sequencer that would do pretty much what GarageBand did for me and what MasterTrax did for me. But the nice thing about, I wanted something that could also do audio in the event that I needed to do audio. So I looked at was it Rose Garden and MuseScore, but I could never get them to work correctly. And then I came across Qtractor, and I think it was Klaatu from GNU World Order who had mentioned Qtractor at some point. And that's where I started messing with it. I know I found it that it was in the repositories for the Linux distro I was using at the time, and I gave it a try, and it was a lot better to use for me. I was able to get some music done, and granted there were some issues here and there, but aside from that, I did get actual music done, and it felt good. Finally, I could say I got music going on a Linux platform, so I can work on some music creation and stuff. So
now, are you using drum machines in Qtractor or just synths with the sequencing?
Well, with Qtractor, I was using the soft synths that were in the repository. One that I was using was, at the time, it was called Zinad Sub Effects. But then I started using a fork of that one called Yoshimi. I felt it worked a little better, and it was less crashy than Zinad Sub Effects at the time. But I hear that it's actually improved. I guess the development picked up on it again. So
two. It's usable. Now the new player on the block with the software since is Odin 2, which is fantastic.
Yes, I agree with you totally. I actually installed it on Thursday. On Thanksgiving, I installed it on Thanksgiving night, didn't have anything to do. We were waiting for dinner and whatever. So I was like, let me try this out. And it wasn't in the repositories. I did have to download the manual installer, but it worked. I went ahead, I installed it, installed the sound fonts everywhere we needed to be, you know, the presets and the, because I think it comes with a VST and it comes with an LV2 plugin.
Yep, and
so
it works.
It installed both. Yeah,
it
works. And I was so impressed with that. I was messing around. I actually whipped up a quick little acid track. I was messing around yesterday. I was playing around with a filter and stuff. And because I was trying to see if I can get something to remap the mod wheel to control the filter.
Right,
on some of the synths, and I couldn't get it done with, I was using Fluid Synth, but Fluid Synth is a sample playback, so it really wasn't going to work there, but I haven't tried it on any of the others, like AM Synth or Yoshimi, like I mentioned. But going back to your question, yes, I actually have used the drum machine. I've used Hydrogen for drums, and I managed to find a couple of other sound drum patches for it. Some electronics, a few other ones that free that are online free. Where they are, I have no idea. I got to look up the links and everything. I know we're kind of doing this on the fly, but if anything, I'll go ahead and provide the links depending on where this gets uploaded. But
it's what I'm looking to do as a guitar player and a bass player is I want to get some song ideas down. I want to put some drum machines on there for rhythm. Maybe throw in some keyboard pads or a pagiator or something like that, you know, just backgrounds, maybe some pipe, you know, background stuff, fill out the sound. So from that perspective, the Odin, you know, just going through the presets, there's a lot of usable stuff on there, synths and strings and just pads and stuff. Really, really good sounds.
Yes, I did play around with some of the presets, and yes, the patches that they've got are like professional quality patches. Like, not to knock on Yoshimi or any of the other ones, but some of those patches are a little rough, if you know what I mean. They don't sound bad, but they're not that great. So you kind of have to tweak them a little bit, or you just create your own. But that's the thing is, I've messed around doing like sound design and programming patches and stuff on synths. And that can take up a lot of time, so you really have to dedicate some time to that. But if you can get some good, decent presets that are ready to go that you can pick through, and just get the creation flowing, I mean that's what matters. And I think Odin definitely has that because I started messing around with some of the patches there. Really nice stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be honest, you know, MIDI's been available since, like the mid-80s for keyboard players, and you guys have the ability to pull up all these, you know, sequences and samples and use all these amazing sounds. You know, back in the day, back in the 60s and 70s, you know, keyboardists would either have, like, analog synthesizers like a Moog or something like that,
yeah.
Or they would do something like a Mellotron with basically tape loops, and it's stupid. Mm-hmm. Each time you hit the key, it's actually playing a tape loop.
Yep. And I remember reading about those and how difficult it was actually to do maintenance on them because of the fact that they had the tapes, actual tapes, looped. Because I think that there were instances where, similar to like what would happen with a cassette tape, the tape gets caught in something or it gets damaged and, you know, it's messy. But that's all they had back then. So, you know, it was and it had an interesting sound too. It had its own unique sound, just like the Hammond organs. Run them through a Leslie, and it's unmistakable. You know, and mainly because of the Leslie speaker, and that was all analog at the time.
Yeah, so these guys would have these incredible. You look at the keyboard players, you know, like Keith Emerson's or the John Lord, you know, back in the day, and these guys would just have banks and banks of keyboards. You know, Rick Wakeman. And that's what they had to deal with at the time. And then MIDI came along, and everything's digitized, and now you have libraries of sounds. Amazing, you know?
Yeah, a funny thing, and I could be wrong on this, but I remember reading that the original idea of MIDI was to be able to have synths connected together so that they could be layered, because back in the day, back in those days, with those analog synths and a lot of the other keyboards, I mean, you only have two hands, so you can only
play so many instruments at the same time and layer so many sounds to create, you know, different textures and timbres and whatnot. But, you know, I know that with analog synths, you know, they had the control voltage that would, you know, they'd be able to control certain synths that way. I know that with like analog sequencers and stuff like that, they would use that. But it was very primitive from what I remember reading. And it took a lot. Sometimes they had to do multiple recordings in order to layer, like if it was a studio project, in order to layer those sounds together to get the desired sound. But then playing it live was difficult to do because you only have two hands and you're trying to get all those instruments layered. It's kind of hard. So MIDI made that a lot easier because you could set each instrument to a specific channel, and those instruments, they could be layered on the same channel, pick those patches, and you're ready to go and you got the sound you want. So and then of course they threw in sequencers to that, and they realized, oh, we can control these instruments digitally and create patterns and have those play. Granted, the sequencers at the time weren't like a digital audio workstation where you can record basically a performance. It would be just patterns similar to like the old analog sequencers, but very, you know, it really made life easier for musicians and mainly keyboardists, because that's with the original intent of it being just to layer sounds. And just how it evolved from there is incredible.
Yeah, I have to say, I've always been very jealous of keyboard players having that ability to just, you know, instantly call up all these different sounds. Now, with the guitar and the bass, they've had, you know, the last 15 years, effects pedals that are digital where you can do presets and pull up sounds and whatnot. But the last couple of years, it's really gone to the next level. You have what's called impulse responses, which are basically samples of cabinet sounds, all different brands, cabinets and amplifiers. And what they've done is they've taken different microphones at different locations and distances and different rooms and whatnot, and they've digitally recorded what these cabinets sound like. And what it is they're able to they create libraries of wave files, and you have what's called an IR loader, either inside of a pedal box or in your digital audio workstation, where you're able to pull up these different amp sounds and in post-production add those sounds to your guitar tracks that you've recorded. And it sounds like you're playing through that amplifier. It's really amazing.
Wow.
It's really,
that's really amazing. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And
that's really cool.
Now, there's different companies that do it. Like, there's one that's really well-known, Own Hammer. They have some really nice ones, really high-quality ones. But I found another one. This is a company called AudioSalt. They're based in Mexico. And they have all that stuff. They have, like, you know, amplifier simulations and whatnot. But, you know, they also have libraries, drum sounds, these impulse responses. And they have a couple applications where you can load them in either for guitar or bass. And they're relatively cheap. Like, I purchased the bass suite. It was like $6. It has, like, the IR responses for the bass, all different cabinets and amps. And it also has a standalone application if you want to just kind of just practice and play around with the sounds. It was like $6. I mean, you can't beat that.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
that's a steal.
So yeah, that's AudioSalt.mx, and so they have the Duality Bass Studio for $6. Right. They have the standalone application also compiled as a VST plugin, which works. I've tried both of them and they work really well. Now they also have an IR loader for Linux that you can buy. That's a little more. I think it was on sale for like $10. And then they have this, there's another application they have called Reamp that also includes a fairly large suite of IR libraries for like $60. But they offer Linux versions and they work. I don't think there's any other commercial vendor that's doing this type of stuff besides them. If there is, I'd like to know. Please send me an email if anybody knows about it. But AudioSalt on MX has them, so you can go in there. It's not their entire suite of software and libraries that are compiled for Linux, but there's a bunch of them that are, and they work, and they're relatively affordable.
Right, right. Oh, that's really cool. That's very cool. I don't know of any other, because I haven't really looked, like some of the commercial stuff and the support on Linux. I've just mainly stuck to a lot of the free and open source stuff that's been online. You know, and that's, like I said, that's rather hit or miss, depending on some patches. And I know there have been some sound fonts that have been donated. I want to say they've been donated just kind of to the community for music production. Basically, samples of pianos and stuff like that. And some of them are really good. Some of them are really good. Some of them are kind of, they're a bit rough around the edges, but a few others are actually pretty good. I had them loaded up, and I've just played, you know, just stuff that I've composed. And I'm very impressed with the sound. And granted, I really don't have anything else to compare. Like, I know that, who's this? There's a company that has a lot of this stuff. Give me one sec.
While you're looking for that, the website for Odin 2 is www.thewavewarden.com. So it's thewavewarden.com. You can go there. You can download packages. I think they have Debian and Ubuntu, or just a generic Linux one. And it's really good. It's VST3. Now, I know back in the day, VST didn't play really nice with the Linux stuff, but with VST3, it's much improved. And in our door, you put the VSTs in the right folder, and they're completely accessible by our door for the different instruments, whether you're doing a MIDI track for keys, vocals, guitar, bass. You can pull up all these VST plugins, and they work fairly well. I know our door also, you can do some Windows-only plugins with Wine. I haven't gotten a chance to play with that yet, but I hear it is usable.
Yeah, I tried to do a couple of things like that a few years ago, because I did hear that the VST was starting to support Linux a little more. And I remember at the time with a few of them, I tried doing it with Wine. But I didn't really dig too deep with that. I couldn't get it working, so I was like, okay, I'm just gonna stick with what I have. But yeah, the support with the VST has improved quite a bit in the last few years. I remember there being a time I would look at some of these free downloadable VSTs, and then to find out that I couldn't use them on Linux, I was like, ah, goodness. So you know, there's the LV2, and that works pretty well. And I think that came up as an alternative to the VST, I believe.
Yes.
But now that the support is there, I remember hearing something about some issues if you're using VST plugins, and I don't know if this is true. I just kind of saw it, and it kind of stuck with me. Certain VST plugins, if you use them and you produce, you know, and you distribute your music for monetary purposes or whatever, that I think you have to, I don't remember, something you had to register, or you had to sort of license it, or I don't remember what it was. So that kind of stuff kind of kept me away from it, just because I'm not really distributing any for the thing for money, but I thought it was kind of weird, but I don't know. I could be totally wrong on this. It's just something that I remember saying, and it just kind of stuck with me. I don't know if you would know anything about that.
I have not gotten to that point. Right now, I am in getting my chops back up, figuring out some songs I want to write, and just doing some basic demos of my song ideas. That's what I want to do, so that when I get to a band situation, I could say, here's 6 songs I wrote. What do you think? You know,
right.
If I have any, you know, complimentary parts and collaborate a little bit. That's where my head is right now.
Yeah, I'm like you. I'm trying to get back my chops back and everything. It's been a while since I've actually sat down. Just life getting in the way. being able to sit down and even sit down to just practice for a little while. It's been tough. But you know, trying to do as much as I can in that respect, and especially trying to see if I can actually sit down and record some stuff and start creating again. You know, just when life gets in the way, just kind of that, all that stuff kind of goes in the back burner.
Yep, you gotta do what you gotta do. Pay the bills, feed the kids, keep everybody happy.
Yep. So now, talking about Ardour, I remember years ago I had installed Ardour, and I guess it was a bit over my head at the time, especially as I was trying to familiarize myself with Jack. And since that only, as far as I know, I think it only works with Jack. I could be wrong.
Yeah. Sure. On Linux.
Yeah. So it was tough getting all that working for me. So I was like, well, let me just stick with QTractor. And the other thing was that at the time it didn't have MIDI support, so it was only audio. It was only digital audio that it dealt with. I installed it recently after you had mentioned it to me, and I said, let me give it another whirl and see. I think on because I'm running Fedora right now, Fedora 33, so that in the repos there, I believe it's Ardour 6.3.
Right, that's six, installed. Six is the latest version.
Yeah, so that one I basically mixed down to that because I was using prior to upgrading to 33. I was on 32 and previous. There was a little application called Jamin, J-A-M-I-N.
Yes, I'm familiar.
I don't know
with
if you're familiar.
One.
Yep. Yes, it's a mixed down mastering for Jack, and because I could never, for the life of me, get QTractor to export the audio correctly. It would just freeze, and it would sit there and would take forever, and it would always fail. That whenever it supposedly finished, there was nothing there on the file.
That's disappointing.
So, yeah, it's very disappointing. So I had to find ways to get around that. So what I would do is I would, before I use Jamin, I would actually loop the audio back into another track on QTractor. And from what I've heard, that's a big no-no. But it was the only way I can actually get the audio recorded. It worked. I just had to make sure I didn't have any of the monitors on because it would feedback like crazy and blow out my ears. I learned that the hard way. but it worked for a time. The only thing I noticed is that I couldn't monitor the levels, so sometimes the levels would be a bit low. But with Jamin, I was able to output it, and super simple. I just hit play on QTractor, and that just recorded everything into a file, and that file was ready to go. It didn't have to do anything out of the ordinary.
Or is it MIDI?
No, as a WAV file. As a WAV file. And I think you could tell it to save as MP3, but I preferred just the lossless, you know, file, and then I would convert it using FFmpeg or whatever. But with Fedora 33, it's no longer in the repos. I wasn't aware that development had stopped a long time ago on that. It was no longer in the Fedora repos, and I have the RPM Fusion repos as well. So none of them had it in there. So I was like, well, let me see if I can do it with Ardour. So I threw in Ardour, and I had Jack route the audio from QTractor into Ardour, and it went ahead and recorded just fine.
Nice.
So I had uploaded something there to, I'm on Mastodon, so I had uploaded what I did on Thursday. I uploaded it there, and I put it on my SoundCloud page as well. And it worked really well. Now I was impressed with it. It was a lot easier to use, but it could also be that I'm a lot more familiar with Jack and the routing, the Jack routing, now than I was before.
Yeah. That's cool.
So I want to play a little more with it. And if it works for MIDI, I may go ahead and migrate from QTractor to that.
Right.
But I'd have to play around with it some more and see. Because if the MIDI implementation on that for doing sequencing and stuff like that has improved, if it's worth it, I'm definitely moving over. Because QTractor, it's nice, it's simple,
right.
it's just there's a few roadblocks there that are a bit frustrating for me, and you know I wish they would fix that, and you know maybe throwing sending a bug report or something, I don't know, or a feature request.
would help. But, you know, that all depends down the road, you know, when they actually implement it. I just need something to work for me now. And Ardor's there. It's a little more pro than QTractor. So I might as well give that one a shot. If it works,
yeah,
that's
I
where
mean,
I'm going.
Listen, like I've seen some of these DAWs, these commercial DAWs, and honestly, the interfaces are so similar. It's not even funny.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty standard.
You think about what you're doing. You're just mimicking, you know, it's a digital mixing board, basically. You're being able to pull in your effects, your compression, your EQ, whatever, you know?
Right, right. I did hear you mention Carla a few times during the TLLTS shows. So I actually have that installed. I hadn't really used it. I kind of forgot about it. But I fired it up the other day and I was like, ah, yes. And I remembered that there's basically a rack to just have all your soft synths in.
Right.
And then just kind of route everything there.
It's basically a front end for Jack, really. And you can like when I downloaded the Odin 2 synth, that's what I fired it up for initially through Carla. And it worked right away. It was pretty simple, you know?
Right. Yeah, I'm going to try and see if I can rework everything and just use Carla for that. Because right now I'm loaded with QTractor, I go ahead and I load in the soft synths through there. So it loads them up and, you know, they're just kind of floating there. It gets a little cluttered if there's too many of them. So, you know, having them in basically a virtual rack is a lot cleaner and inside one application. So I know which one I need to control. It's all there. I don't have to go fumbling through different windows trying to find which one's the correct software synth that I need to, you know, kind of play with the filter on the fly or whatever. That can get a little frustrating. So I'm going to play with Carla and see if that can kind of clean up that for me and make it a little more seamless.
Right. In our door, I was able to go in there, hook up my little Akai MIDI keyboard, you know, little tiny thing with the USB connection. And I was able to pull in the Odin 2 as a VST plugin. And I was able to record some sounds, you know, tracks. I was able to do it. It's fairly straightforward. I was very impressed.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to check it out. I would like to get some of my actual synths run through as well, but I'd have to invest in a mixer for that. I'll have to see down the road if that's something I can do, and it's a matter of space as well. I have a Kawai K4, which was my first synth that I got many years ago, and I still have it there. It's in storage right now in the closet. But that one had some really good sounds that I liked messing with, and if I can throw those also into my music creation process, that would be great. I have my Yamaha S08, which is an 88 key weighted synth. So this is really where I do most of my work because of the fact that it feels like an actual piano.
Right,
But you know, and the sounds it has are great. I haven't actually gone in and tried to mess around with any of the patches on this. Just using it as a controller at this point. And working with all the soft synths, but I would like to get back to having those hardware synths integrated along with some of the soft synths because I've found a few of the K4 patches that you can use with or basically sound fonts. They have them as sound fonts, and I don't like them at all. I don't like them at all. They kind of remind me of what the sounds were like, but they're not exactly as I remember them on the original K4. So I'd rather have the original being run through and controlled through MIDI than using those sound fonts because they just can't compare. They don't compare to the original thing. But now possibly something like Odin 2 may be able to handle that. But yeah, I mean, if I've got the real thing, I might as well use it.
Exactly. And it's actually nice. The more the better, you know, be able to integrate whatever, you know, into your sound it's great. And that's what you want. You want to have options.
Exactly. So, and yeah, I mean, I'm also looking at a couple of hardware upgrades. Like I said, I just got those to those two SSDs that I purchased. One of them is going into my laptop, the other one's going into my desktop. So that should improve performance as far as, you know, maybe less X runs when doing some of the MIDI stuff and the recording. More RAM helps, of course.
Of course.
But having a solid state drive definitely
speeds helps. Up the process.
It speeds up the process. It should make things a little more fluid.
My machine is an old machine here. This thing's got to be at least 6 years old. Now, it seems to be holding up doing the stuff in our door, okay? I noticed there's a little latency, like when if I'm plugging in a guitar or a bass into my Behringer USB. I have the Euphora UMC 404 HD external input, and that's pretty nice. The latency is really low. It works really well with Linux. So a lot of the Behringer stuff in general works well with Linux. I was originally going to get the two-channel model, the 202, but they discontinued it, and I can only get the four input one, which is okay, which is fine. You know, I can do stereo, record the stereo guitar tracks. I can have another mic, a couple of mics plugged in and do vocals. I could have my bass going in direct line. Bass tends to actually sound fairly good direct with no preamp or anything, but it's nice that if you got a preamp to beefing up the sound. And also these IR libraries for bass, there's actually some really good ones. I was playing around with that duality bass setup, and I was getting some freaking great bass sounds. He had some samples of Marshall, like a little grungy sounding, like a little heavy sounding. And
right.
I was using some Ampeg and an SVT cabinet IR, and it sounded freaking awesome. I was getting really good sound, and you know, with just you know my cheapy $350 PV bass. And I was very impressed. I tweaked it. I put a little compression on it, put some chorus on it, and it sounded really good. I was very impressed.
Nice, nice. Yeah, you got to sample some of that.
I will.
Take a listen.
As soon as I have some songs completed, I'll share, definitely.
Yeah, I have some stuff on that I've done throughout the years on SoundCloud.
What's
send you the
URL?
Link.
Read it out. Let's hear it.
Let me go to the profile so I can get the actual
okay,
link.
Okay, where you're looking, we're talking about hardware. One of the companies that is really, really impressed right now is moddevices.com. Basically, what it is, it's a German company. I think the guy who CEO is an Italian guy. And they're based out of Berlin. And what they've done is they crowdsourced their devices. So far, they had two. They had the Mod Duo and then the Mod Duo X. And now the Mod Dwarf is coming out. And the way they're marketing these things as guitar effects units, but they're not just that. They're way more than that. They're basically embedded Linux computers, okay, on processors, okay? And it has a ton of effects, cabinet simulations, amplifiers, different distortions, different delays and reverbs, but they also have synth software, all the ones that we know.
Right.
And they also have sequencers built into the freaking thing. So these stomp boxes, you can basically you can use two devices at the same time. Say you can do like a guitar or a synth, or a guitar and a bass, or a bass and a synth, or a vocal and a synth at the same time. And it's amazing. They have all these different plugins. They have like you can go into their store and download all these different patches and plugins. And it's basically an open platform based on Linux, a commercial device. And there's professional musicians using them. And they're really amazing. Go on YouTube if you get a chance. And look up the Mod Duo, the Mod Duo X, and the Mod Dwarf, and just check out some of the things that people are doing with these devices. And really, really, really freaking impressive that they've basically built a commercial product based on Linux pretty much completely.
Yeah, I'm looking at the website right now. It's a pretty impressive device. I hear you talking about this, and this reminds me of a synth that came out, I think, I want to say early 2000s, or maybe mid 2000s. A synth that came out, I don't remember who the manufacturer was, but it was a Linux synth. It ran Linux. And it was a full synth with the keys and everything. I just cannot remember the name.
That's
and
okay.
I was trying to do a search for it right now, but of course I do Linux synths and I got a bunch of the software synths. As a matter of fact, I ended up coming onto this site while I was searching for Linux synths, and it's called linuxsynths.com, and it's got basically shows a bunch of software synths that you can use on Linux or, you know, any other, I guess these would work on any other platform as well if they support them as a plugin.
Correct.
But yeah, I mean, there's one called 4OSC, there's the ALSA Modular Synth, AM Synth, BeatZill, Borderlands, a bunch, and that's just in the A's. I mean, it's a whole list. So it's that one's linuxsynths.com, all one word, so... So yeah, linuxsynths1word.com.
Yeah, so that mod device, you know, it's an ARM process based device. Everything has to be compiled for the platform. Now,
right.
I was going in looking in their store. They have a ton of free stuff in their store for plugins and different things. And all the stuff that we know that we've been talking about, you know, Zinsynth, and they're all in there. You GuitarX plugins, Racker X, whatever.
Yeah.
They're all in there, but they also have some commercial vendors supporting them. There's this one company called Fair, F-A-I-R, and they have a bunch of stuff that you can purchase when you have those devices that are like professional level stuff. Now, there are other vendors that do this kind of thing. For instance, there's the Line 6 Helix. I was looking at that, and that's a pretty expensive device. It's like $1,200, $1,300, $1,400 in that range.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of does the same kind of stuff. You know, it's their own proprietary setup, but you can pull in like third-party IR libraries for the guitar stuff. But they don't have any of the synthesizer stuff that the mod stuff has. And
right.
the mod, you can also use that for vocals, bass. I mean... It's really, really freaking impressive.
Yeah, no, just the way things have developed, not just for supporting Linux, but hardware running Linux under the hood for music production has just been impressive.
I mean,
and this other one is just one more of those.
I mean, for all we know, you know, Line 6 or one of these other companies, Torpedo, whatever, Two Notes, all that stuff could be Linux under the hood, and we just don't know about it, for all we know.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm sure, and like you said, we don't know, we're not aware, and yeah, they could be using some form of Linux under the hood.
Yeah, or libraries or whatever, you know, different layers, you know. But the mod people are very open. They're Linux guys. They're a Linux company, you know. But if you go on and look at the people that are using their devices, guy from King Crimson's using it. A couple other real big bands. Go, if you look on their website and look at the artist list, you'll see who's using their stuff. It's professional people.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Very impressive. Impressive.
So I'm looking to get my hands on the Dwarf box when it comes out. Supposedly coming out in February. They did an Indiegogo for it. And that's what I want to try next.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. I'm still trying to find out what that synth was. And it was a synth that was open source. And it ran Linux under the hood, if I'm not mistaken. But I can't. I even went to Google. I was doing DuckDuckGo, but
I remember this. I definitely remember what you're talking about.
Let me see. I'm still trying to find it, but
yeah.
I'm giving up. I'm giving up.
I hear you. It's okay. So yeah. So you know, a lot of this stuff has progressed so much. It's pretty usable at this point. I mean. You know, people tend to use what works for them and they stick with it. You know, they don't jump around too much, but why not? I mean, if it works, use it, you know, like I
play absolutely.
But all this is, it's, it's mature to the point where it's actually usable. Now, going forward, I know Linux, they're looking to get rid of like Jack and all the different old sound services. You're talking about this new version called Pipes, I think they're calling it.
Yeah, I was actually going to bring that up. It's called Pipewire. I'm on the page right now, and it says Pipewire is a project that aims to greatly improve handling of audio and video under Linux. It's basically going to give it the idea of this is to finally give Linux audio the love that it needs, the importance that it definitely needs, because I mean, for the past I don't know how many years, audio on Linux has been a disaster. And even to this day, it can be a disaster. So like, for example, if you want to, let's say you run Jack, the minute you run Jack, you lose sound on every other application that doesn't support Jack.
I know.
So like, I'll have Firefox running and I'll fire up Jack. That's it. No sound from anything on Firefox until I quit Jack. And then it starts routing through through Pulse Audio. Pulse Audio was supposed to be the savior for audio on Linux, and while it has improved things on the Linux side for audio, it's mainly just for general usage. I haven't seen anything where it's used for any musical creation or musical, you know, sound routing or anything that like Jack would do. And Pipewire seems to aim for kind of both, because it says here, it provides a low-latency graph-based processing engine on top of audio and video devices that can be used to support use cases currently handled by both Pulse Audio and Jack. So I know that it's in Fedora right now, because I by chance came to notice that's in there. How it's being used, I don't know. I'm still bouncing between Jack and Pulse Audio, so I don't know how Pipewire fits in all of that.
I think what it's supposed to do is replace everything and just be one layer. Because right now, we've basically got three layers going. And it looks to simplify it so that's a single layer. And by doing that, it'll make things much simpler and maybe even cut down on you know, the latency of it, too. Because you don't have to go through three layers. You're only going to be going through one directly.
Right. Yeah, because right now, we've got what? We have Pulse Audio, ALSA,
Jack,
and you know, some applications use GStreamer, and yeah.
So if they can simplify the process to where the other platforms are at, I'm all for that.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely.
Now, I know with Ardour, there is one primary developer. It's this guy, Paul Davis. We interviewed him on TLLTS. And he asked that people, if you use it regularly, do a subscription model with them where you pay him either a yearly subscription or a monthly subscription. So I've done that in the past, and I plan on doing that soon too. Start paying him, because that's all he does, you know, dedicated. And
right.
I'm pretty sure he's open for people to suggest, you know, request tickets to donate money to get things, certain things implemented, you know, to improve MIDI. I know if you watch UNFA, UNFA, dude on, I don't know if he's Italian or German or whatever, he's on YouTube. He's a Linux guy and he's a musician. And he does a lot of tutorials with Ardour and other Linux-related and free and open source applications for audio production.
Yes, I've seen him. I've seen him a few times. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, he talks about what are the weaknesses, what needs to improve. So if this is something you want, you know, shoot Paul Davis from Ardour an email. Ask him if you're willing to kick in some money. I'm sure he'll take it and work to get that implemented.
Yeah, I'm going to look into that too. I'm going to try and see if I can play some more with Ardour just to get familiar with it and you know, if I can use it for both audio and MIDI, then for sure I'll definitely be looking at you know, throwing some money his way for the support. I mean, yeah. You know, if that's all he's working, I mean, you know, he's doing all of this. It's an open source project. You know, it's free, but you know, he's got to pay bills too. And you know, all this stuff, the more you can give to donate to help these projects, the better. And it keeps them going.
Right. I mean, I prefer open, you know, but there are closed vendors like that Audio Soul company in Mexico.
Yeah.
At least they're providing a commercial option.
Right. No, and that's great. I think that's great. I personally don't have a problem with that. If they provide support, I think there's another application that is actually closed source that I'm trying to remember the name. I don't know if it's a sequencer or something, but it's not Reactor. It's the Reactor is the Native Instruments one. And that's what I was looking at earlier for soft synths and stuff like that to compare the commercial ones. That's one of the commercial ones. Reaper, that's the name.
Right,
of it.
Right.
Reaper.
I've heard of Reaper.
Reaper.
Yep.
That one, it's a closed source application, but it's available for Linux. And I personally don't have any problems with that. They're supporting
Linux. I don't have a
problem
with that
either. They're providing support for Linux. I think that's great. Stuff that you wouldn't have seen. Not even in the last 5 years,
I know.
And it's great to see that, you know, and some people may have issue with it being a closed source application, you know, that is what it is. They don't, you know, they don't have to use it, but
exactly.
It's there and it's good. It's good that they're supporting the Linux community that way.
I agree 100%. Open and free is better, but closed commercial, that can exist too. And that's fine.
Yeah. And sometimes if it's an option that works for you and it's better, then yeah, I mean, I would say use it. Hopefully that, you know, it would push some of the open source options to kind of push a little more, you know, to kind of bring in certain features like that and kind of improve their end, you know, but, you know, It depends. It depends on the developer. It depends on the people, you know, on whether anybody's using it. Like, for example, Jamin, I thought it was great, but, you know, if it's not being developed, it's, what good is it? You know what I mean?
Exactly. It's got to be usable. And people have to use it.
Correct.
Well, we're coming up around 45 minutes. Claudio, I really enjoyed talking to you. It's great scene where Linux audio is. Currently,
same here, man.
It's,
same
it seems,
here. This
seems
is
to
fun.
Be at a good place. It's heading in the right direction, and perhaps we can do this again in the future after we have a little more experience, you know, getting more recordings done, working with Ardour, working with the different synths, and you know, we can circle back and talk about different topics again. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Sounds good to me. Yeah. No, thanks for making this happen. This was a lot of fun. I'm glad we can kind of discuss what we've been doing and how we've been using these tools and how they've progressed and developed and matured and evolved to how they are today. So definitely look forward to the next one.
Absolutely. Thank you, Claudia. I appreciate it. Take care. If I don't speak to you,
you
before
too.
Christmas,
you.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Same to you. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.